The attempt to try to put the brakes on out-of-control government programs obviously ruffles some people, but I think it's essential. Beyond that, the initiatives taken in almost every area, whether it's in agriculture where we ban the short-handled hoe, whether it's in business where we set up a home loan board for the first time in the history of California to give low-income loans, whether it's in health and welfare where we're giving more money to the aged and the disabled, whether it's in budgetary matters where the budget is increasing half of what it was under the previous administration. There are initiatives across a broad front in government. And in the initial period, some people may see it as a one-man show. I see it as a show of 200,000 people, because what I bring is a very small number of people and a few ideas. And for the most part, we're dependent on those who are there now, who were there before me, and who will be there long after I'm gone. And they're doing the work. They have the authority. And I give them, hopefully, the inspiration and the general direction. And I think that direction is sound. It's fiscally prudent. But it's human and it's open to the changing realities that I see this state and this country facing.
Good evening and welcome to this expanded one-hour version of the KNBC News Conference. Our guest, Governor Edmund G. Brown, Jr., in his first such appearance since he became California's chief executive last January. I'm Bob Abernathy, KNBC News. With me to question the governor tonight are KNBC News reporters Jess Marlow and Warren Olney, and KNBC News Sacramento Bureau Chief Steve Mallory. Please remember, our questions do not necessarily reflect personal views. They're aimed only at getting a story. Jess?
Gentlemen, let's move into an area where we are warned at least we can expect inaction. You're said to believe that unemployment is a federal problem, that in fact neither you nor the state can do anything about it. With California having unemployment in excess of 10%, far above the national average, isn't there something you should do about it?
Yeah, unemployment is something the state can do something about, but the creation of new jobs is fundamentally a national problem. What we can do at the state level is to stimulate where we can, for example, the housing industry, which we're doing through the new housing finance agency and through the veterans home loans that we provide, through the sewer bond money that we have and we're getting from the federal government, through things like the Ecology Corps, through federal grant programs, through transit programs. These are all programs that help out. But the basic area where the state helps the unemployed is through the unemployment insurance and through the state office of employment development, where we find jobs for people that do exist. But as far as the overall national picture of moving unemployment from 10 or 9% down to 4 or 5%, that's a national phenomenon. It depends on stimulating the economy. It depends on aerospace, on international trade. It depends on people working all over the country, including the governor of California and all the other people. But, you know, to actually create on a massive scale new jobs, I don't think there's an economist or a political figure in the country who would say that that can be done in any one place.
James
Texas,
Lorenz.
They have them. You know, they have a lot of contracts, but that comes out of the last administration, the last Democratic administration, where they shifted the aerospace to Texas and things like that.
James Lorenz, the man you fired from your cabinet, says that you are losing billions in federal contracts that might produce jobs in California because you won't staff an economic development office in Washington that would keep track of those contracts.
Well, that's not true. Every amount of federal money that we can, where it's appropriate, we go out and get it.
How do you decide whether it's appropriate or not?
Well, if, for example, we're getting over $1 billion in water treatment money, and through our Water Quality Control Board, we're trying to pour that into the cities and counties where they need it. But now let's
take how many jobs that'll create?
I think it'll produce about 30,000 jobs over a three-year period.
In billions of dollars?
Yeah, billions of dollars. One of the questions where we have some money at the federal level is in freeways. And the question becomes, do we want to build more freeways, which lead to pollution, which perhaps are unnecessary, and which perhaps exacerbate the energy crisis? And there you do have the very tough political question. Do you spend state money, do you raise state gas taxes, just to attract the federal money that's available, even though the long-term consequences may be very bad for the people and the quality of life here in California? That's a question I'm looking at now, and it's a very difficult one. But as far as available federal money for solid programs, we're getting all we can, even recognizing the fact that the federal government is going into debt, $70, maybe $80 billion, and the Secretary of Labor is talking about reducing taxes. Now, that's quite a sleight of hand, wherein the federal government lowers taxes, runs a deficit, And then all the states go back and fund their problems out of money that I don't know that the federal government has. And I don't think it's altogether responsible for a governor of California to kid people and say, well, we don't raise your taxes. We don't have the money here. We'll just get in a plane and go to Washington, because it's the same money. It's the federal income tax. It's excise taxes. It's corporation taxes. And I think you, as a state official, must have the same kind of responsibility that a congressman or a senator or anything else. We're all part of one country, and I'm not going to try to inflate expectations based on federal funds that I have a hunch may not be available over the next few years. I think things are getting tougher, and I think we've got to learn to restrain some of the inflated expectations while we try to equalize the opportunity that we have. And that's a very difficult thing, because in the past, the liberal programs have been funded out of economic growth.
How many jobs, other than the 30,000, are you going to get from federal money?
Well, we'll get probably the water quality money brings in maybe 30,000. The housing finance agency that we have, by guaranteeing loans for housing construction, could bring in as many as 30,000. Then we have transportation jobs, another 10 or 20,000. That's about it. There's more. We're meeting with businessmen now. We have a task force trying to get them to take people. And in some cities, business has helped. I think as a statewide, on a statewide basis, we can get business to take more people and hire them. And through that means, I hope we can do the best job we can.
You going to cut business taxes in order to encourage them to do that?
No.
Then how are you going to get them to do it?
If we cut business taxes, we're going to have to increase personal taxes. The fact is that the...
No, but you just said you hoped or expected that business could hire some of the people who are now unemployed. What can you at the state level do to encourage them to do that?
We can work with them. We can present to them the very real specter that if business can't provide more of the jobs, then it will fall upon the government to do so. And I have no doubt that government... we'll have to step in if business can't make it. That's something I'm reluctant to see, but we have to have a economic system where everyone has a chance for a job.
But is that impetus to get business to act? How are you going to get business to create jobs?
We're working with them now. We're meeting with them. We're seeing what they can do. As I say, it's a matter of stimulation of the entire economy. And during this period of transition, where we've been dependent on fossil fuel, on the automobile, we're in for some hard times. And to cushion that, we have unemployment insurance. We'll probably be raising it in the next few months. And we have to provide all the assistance we can. But it's not an easy picture. And to try to draw a rosier picture than actually exists, I think is intellectually dishonest. And I don't think it serves anyone's purpose. I think we have to say the facts the way they are and then go from there.
You say you keep trying to find ways to make jobs or find jobs, yet so far in your economizing efforts, you have closed down some departments in state government. Is that going to continue, and we're going to have more people looking for work?
I can't in good conscience keep a program going that serves no useful purpose. We had the criminal justice department. We had 278 people who were just repeating what was done at the local level. And that was just an unnecessary layer of bureaucratic paperwork. And I don't feel in good conscience that I can preside over taking money from ordinary people who are working to give to other people who aren't serving a valid purpose. Now, all those people that we eliminated the department where they worked, they've all been placed, at least all the ones that I know of, either in the government or in other jobs.
Do we foresee more cutbacks like that in state government?
Well, there's a possibility in the highway department of some cutbacks. We're trying to find the people jobs, and we're considering whether or not possibly building roads may be the best thing to do. We may have to come to the point in this country where we just build things even though they're not necessary.
You're going to encourage that?
We have a trade-off. I'm very reluctant to do that. I'm looking to finding out what we need. In road building, we have safety requirements. We have bus lanes. There's a great deal of work to be done, including maintenance. But at some point, you reach beyond the necessary, and you're getting very much into the maybe desirable, but certainly not essential, when you think of the burden that people are paying. And if you look at the ingredient of inflation, taxation is one of the largest and the fastest growing elements. And you can't, as you think of one part of the economy, you can't forget the other. And wherever I go, whether they be Democrats, Republicans, liberals, conservatives, people are wondering, do they have to keep paying more? And the challenge that I see and that I address myself to is to redirecting government effort while not escalating the cost unnecessarily. And that's not the task of 6 months. It's at least a four-year proposition, and I'm going to do everything I can. I'm not going to go the easy route of promising the moon, creating a public relations extravaganza, coming up with very little, and letting the taxes just go up gradually every year. I'd like to try something a little better than that.
The highway people say they cannot maintain the existing roadway system, much less build anything new, unless there's an increase in the gas tax. There's a bill in the legislature to do that. Are you going to support it or not?
I'm going to take a good look at it. I haven't decided yet. I'm not sure that the maintenance can't be maintained without that gas tax. And that's one of the questions that I came to Los Angeles to determine, and I don't think all the results are in yet. It's a matter of how much you maintain, what you complete, and where you think we ought to be in transportation.
Why did you have to come to Los Angeles to determine that?
Well, how else would you do it? The people are here. Obviously, you can do it in Sacramento and a number of places, but I'd like to make matters of government concern matters of public debate. These are not things that I can decide just, ultimately I will, to the extent that I have a vote or I have a veto. But people have to become aware of the changing character of American society.
Okay, what are the alternatives to increasing the gas tax?
Just to carry on the way we are, to...
But your own people in the Department of Transportation say you can't do that.
No, that's not true. There's a division of opinion.
Okay.
There's a division of opinion within the department. And one of the very troublesome questions that bothers me is basically the jobs problem. I see that as the central question in the freeway question. Our transportation system is equaled nowhere in the world. It's number one. And we can afford a certain leveling off of that. I don't know whether we can afford laying off 5,000 people.
I'm more motivated
by that than I am pouring a little more concrete. And it's not just the 5,000, because it has a multiplier effect on construction, building trades, laborers, cement, any number of things are created and stimulated through road building. And possibly when you weigh the pros and cons, additional revenue from taxes may make more sense to stimulate the economy. It's something I'm thinking about. It'll have to be decided in the next 60 to 90 days.
What kind of a role is the state going to play in rapid transit? You're saying that it has other problems with transportation?
Rapid transit, that's something that's right now under consideration. Mayor Bradley has some proposals. Our business and transportation's agency is working with them, and we're trying to see whether we can make it pay. The BART system is off to a rather unhappy start. It'll probably be coming to the state for more assistance. I think rapid transit will make more sense as the gas price goes up, as the difficulty of the private automobile becomes more obvious. Then you're going to see more of a shift
to
busing and public transit.
Is it now definite that the state will put in its share of the gas tax money for the Los Angeles first starter route?
To the extent that it's available. And that's only a portion of the gas tax.
Now what is it? So what have they talked about? Something like 80 million?
I think that's over a number of years.
Yes.
It's the amount of money that was permitted under a constitutional amendment.
Right.
But the problem is that...
Permitted, but the decision has to be made to take it away from building roads and put it into the rapid transit. Have you made that decision?
That's basically a local
decision. You have to make the decision about the state level, about the state money, don't you?
We can provide money if it'll make sense, and we can put the money where we think it'll do good. And that right now is under consideration.
You haven't decided yet to put in the state money. Have you decided?
Well, there's a local portion that comes from the gas tax and can be diverted to rapid transit. That's a decision for the locality to make.
Well, isn't it a decision? It's a decision for the city of Los Angeles, for the county of Los Angeles, for Long Beach, for Burbank, for other cities. But then there's also state money, isn't there?
Limited amount.
Yes. Well, have you made a decision to put in that money into the Los Angeles plan?
Not as yet. We're not complete. The deliberations are just in the process.
There are two alternative routes now being considered, as I understand it, in Los Angeles. One would run primarily on the surface from Canoga Park to Long Beach. Another would run primarily underground from North Hollywood to downtown. Which do you favor?
I don't have any particular preference. I think it's a local matter. Where the state gets in, we're willing to give the money that is due Los Angeles and Southern California if they, in this area, wish to use the money for rapid transit instead of road building. That's fine with us.
You said earlier that
to take it away from other places in the state, that presents another problem.
Wasn't there a consideration at one time the state was going to require that any plan, regardless which plan, whether it's a county plan or the city plan, would have to be self-supporting? Is that feasible?
Not really. Self-supporting without, no. cars aren't self-supporting. If you add pollution, road building, highway patrol, and the other costs associated with driving a car, there's a tremendous amount of public cost and subsidy that goes into that. If we would shift some of that over to rapid transit would be more closely self-supporting than it is now.
You said earlier you're considering an increase in the gasoline tax. How do you reconcile that with your pledge not to increase any taxes?
I'm considering it because it's before the legislature. I'm not proposing it. It's there, and I will either veto it if it passes, or I'll sign it, or we'll compromise.
You pledged there would be no tax increases. Wouldn't that mean that you'd have to veto it?
Well, that's not for this year. It's actually written so it takes place next year.
Governor, you've talked.
I don't have it under consideration. Senator Mills has a bill, and he's been very much interested in seeing it pass.
Well, how can you not have it under consideration?
Sooner or later, I'll have to make a decision as to whether I support it or not, and that requires some consideration.
How can you not have it under consideration when at least some of the people in the highway department are saying that just to keep up maintenance, you're going to have to increase it by a penny right now, just to maintain the existing system?
No, I don't agree with that. I'm not prepared.
You think the highway people are wrong?
Well, there's a division within the highway.
Well, it's the deputy director of the department, Robert Best, I think.
Now, you see, there are many ways you can look at this. There's levels of maintenance. And if we want to go without the tax increase, we can have one level of maintenance. If we want to make it a little better, we can do so if we have additional revenues. Possibly the federal government will provide some gas.
What's the difference between one level of maintenance and another? What are you talking about in terms of the guy who has to drive to work on the freeway every day?
Well, there's different ways you can complete off-ramps, you can put up safety barriers. There's any number of projects that you can complete. There are certain freeways that end in a particular place and then continue on surface streets and then pick up again. That's true on Highway 99. You can leave it that way or you can complete it. Matter of judgment. It's a matter of how complete you want to make it. It's never going to be perfect. And it's just a level of perfection that you want to attain.
Would you consider eliminating landscaping, for instance, in-city landscaping, which costs a great deal at the outset and costs even more to maintain? There's watering and that sort of thing.
Well, I don't feel that I'm prepared at this point to talk about whether we grow bushes on the freeway or whether you use one type of maintenance or another. That is a matter that the highway department has to put into options. Then we go to the legislature and we work out the best options we can, and I weigh it against a number of other things. Not only is there automobile traffic and freeways, but we have education, we've got health, we've got environmental considerations, and they're all in competition with the other. The central reality of the 70s, unlike the 60s, is that the economic growth is so reduced that when we help Peter, we're robbing from Paul. And that's a very painful, difficult economic reality that no leader has ever had to face before, at least not to the extent that we're going to in the years ahead. And that's why when we talk highways, we've got to talk education, rapid transit. They're all competing for very limited tax dollars.
Governor, there's concern that we have another medical malpractice crisis to look forward to. What do you plan to do to prevent that from happening?
Well, we're going to have a crisis. The question is how long it'll last. The malpractice rates are going up, and the only way to lower them is to reduce the income of doctors or lawyers.
Reduce
or
the income?
Reduce the recovery by patients. Yes, that's what it amounts to. And I proposed in the special session that I called that limitations be put on legal fees, that the statute of limitations be reduced, that recoveries for pain and suffering be controlled, and other methods by which the enormous recoveries that are now in existence be reduced and brought down so that we can deliver the health care that we need at the same time giving recoveries that are reasonable.
Well, you know this problem's coming, and what you're saying has been said before, and there's a lot of division in the legislature. How are you going to resolve that problem?
Well, we're working at it. The legislature has a bill now, and it's had
several bills.
Yeah, it's difficult. I think there's an idea that I can wave a wand and tell lawyers to reduce their standard of living or tell doctors to give up some of their fees. This is a democracy. The legislature has to work out the various options. I am recommending. I've spent hours talking to doctors and lawyers and legislators, and I think we need a very tough program. We need to have arbitration. We need to put some lid on the legal fees. We need to cap some of the pain and suffering recoveries, and if we do that, we can keep premiums under some manageable level. In addition to that, I think we have to be a little tougher on the doctors. The Board of Medical Examiners have to weed out incompetence and have to control it. And that is somewhat of a painful pill for lawyers, doctors, the medical board, possibly the insurance companies. And out of the difficulties, I expect reasonable legislation to emerge at least before the end of the year.
But how can you expect that to happen when the legislature is now dominated a great deal by attorneys who make considerable amounts of money?
Well, that makes it a little more difficult.
You think it can be done?
I think it will be done, because any time there's a problem that will not go away, we solve it one way or the other. So I have no doubt that come October, when this crisis begins to attract your attention again and the focus is on the legislature, we'll solve it. But yeah, until the pressure mounts, we'll just have to watch it.
There are those who are suggesting you solve some of these problems where litigation is involved by just not providing enough judges to accommodate litigation. You've been accused of...
That's one way to do it.
Is that your motive in not appointing judges quickly enough to satisfy the judiciary, at least?
You can't satisfy the demand for public sector services by giving in to everything that's wanted. There's never enough government to satisfy those who are the immediate beneficiaries. We're appointing judges. They're screened. They go through the bar. I'm trying to get the best possible judges I can. Once you put them on, they're on for life. And I just take that duty very seriously and very conscientiously. And, you know, over the swing of 4 years, 6 months or a year is not a great deal of time to spend in picking human beings that will affect really the life and the property of other people.
You've been accused of having a media-oriented administration, and you just got through saying that we'll solve the medical malpractice question when our attention is called to it again in the fall. Do you want to correct the impression you gave that there is substance to your having a media-oriented administration?
Well, I think I have
really
a hard time.
The way you make decisions?
I have a hard time understanding that, since this is the first program I've been on since I've been elected, which is probably the most unusual thing for a governor to do, not seeking the media to give vent to the rhetoric that all of a sudden.
What did you mean specifically when you said we'll solve the problem when the media's attention is called to it again in the fall?
The problem of malpractice. Now, you know, I would like to tell everybody that everything is easy. We have lots of money. All you do is talk to a few people and pass the law. But that's not life. And I think we don't serve the people of the state by telling them something's easy when it's hard. The medical malpractice is a very difficult, emotional crisis that is going to restructure the lifestyle of lawyers who are operating in that field, doctors, and even patients. And to get that kind of restructuring, that takes a crisis, unfortunately,
but
that's
the
way it is.
What is the role of the media in this process that goes on between you and the legislature?
Well, the doctors get upset, and they march around and send in letters, and you pick that up on the media, and the legislators see it, and they become focused, and I become focused, and pretty soon we work out a solution.
Governor, speaking of crises...
You have to bring to the doctors right now are advertising on television, they're sending out letters, and it's a matter of trying to harmonize the competing claims. The doctors want to stay where they are. The insurance companies want their profit. The lawyers want their profit. The patients obviously want recovery. Now, out of all those competing demands, you need a compromise. You need something that isn't quite what everybody wants, but it's somewhere close to that.
And you're saying that's takes a crisis to produce that?
It doesn't take a crisis, but when you're lowering people's standard of living or the money they get, it takes a lot of pressure. And I'm doing everything I can. We've met literally days on this question. But I don't know that we're ripe for a solution yet.
Governor, let me ask you some quick questions about education in Los Angeles. The school district here says it needs $41 million more in state aid by August 14th, I think, or it's going to have to go through with some major cuts. No sixth period anywhere in senior high, hardly any home-to-school transportation, firing of 800 or 900 long-term substitutes. Will you approve more state money for education within the next few weeks?
There'll be some more money. There's a bill, and I'm meeting with some teachers tomorrow and throughout the following week, and I expect there will be some money coming in the bill that Senator Rada is sponsoring. The exact amount is something I'm now discussing with educational leaders, and I am not prepared to give you my final bottom line on it until I've had a chance to talk to teachers.
You said you'd be reluctant to approve more state aid for the schools until there'd been some basic, fundamental, structural reform. I think that's a quote. Can you state exactly what reforms you want?
I think the Wilson-Riles' plan on early childhood education, which gets parental involvement in the school, which tends to localize decision-making right at the school instead of in a more distant central bureaucracy, getting back to more basics, I think that's down the line that I have in mind. It's a matter of trying to deliver the kind of educational training and discipline that is required. So these kids can get a job and can go to college.
Are you, for instance, asking the Los Angeles Unified District to make basic fundamental structural reforms before it can get any money in August or September?
Well, I think there'll have to be a two-stage process. We'll have a little bit of money in August and maybe a little more the following year, depending upon what kind of reforms we can get.
Governor,
there are some financial inequities that school districts, because of a law passed 2 years ago, receive less money as assessed evaluations go up. And that is a difficult problem, and it's putting teachers at a real disadvantage in comparison to other state and city workers.
As you deal with the Los Angeles District, there will be teachers groups and perhaps members of the school board lobbying for your support, one of whom could be your sister. How are you going to deal with that?
Well, I lobbied her try to bring some new thinking in.
Have you been successful with her?
Well, I think I've been generally successful across the board. I came in to government. Everybody thought they were, it was Christmas time, that we were going to increase taxes, increase all these programs. And I put the lid on it, and I think it's a very salutary thing. So, sure, I'm lobbied. I'm the one who has to, take the buck and do something with it. I quite frankly think that our expectations are inflated. We've got to be leaner. We've got to make government deliver more for people. And as we do that, we have to build up enough confidence so that when we help those in need, those who are providing the wherewithal have a sense that government is doing all that it can at the lowest possible cost.
Are you really promising that government will deliver more to people? Haven't you really been saying government will deliver necessarily less?
I'm trying to deliver more without having to raise the taxes, and it's a very difficult undertaking. I have the sense that American society has to readjust its material expectations.
And accept less.
I really believe that's happening. Take less and do more. I think we got to work harder, and I think we're going to have to put out more, and we're probably going to get less back for it. But I think in the long run, it's going to be all for the good.
Governor, you led a Democratic sweep into Sacramento last year, and since then, the Lieutenant Governor Mervyn Dimely has been accused by the Los Angeles Times of misusing Ford Foundation funds. Ken Corey, the controller, is under investigation by the U.S. Attorney in Sacramento, and there have been claims that he gave out inheritance tax refereeships in return for campaign contributions. Are you concerned about the level of integrity or the image of the Democratic Party in Sacramento at the moment?
Well, I'm concerned about the level of confidence of government in general, and I think it
what
is
what about
low.
These specific instances?
Well, I'm not persuaded. I don't think the Times has proved their case yet. I've tried to read those long editorials they write, and I find them a little hard to follow.
What about the situation with the controller?
Well, that's a matter that, we'll just have to see. The appropriate authorities are looking into it. I think a man is entitled to his day in court or a proper investigation, and then let's see what the judgment is. Just based on, the accusations, I'm not convinced yet.
What about Assemblyman Green, who has admitted that he charged airplane tickets both to a private fund and to the
state?
Well,
I think that's improper, and I believe he's paid it back.
Does Lieutenant Governor Dimely have your complete confidence?
He's certainly playing an important role in the Economic Development Commission. I renewed that, contrary to my sense that I don't think it can quite be as effective as it should be, but I've given him a chance, and he's assured me that he's going to do everything he can, and he's doing a very credible job on the Regents, and, we're all doing the best we can.
Did he personally assure you that the charges leveled against him by the Times articles were false?
Yes, that's what he's... Well, when you say false, there's such a variety of statements, but I've discussed some of these with him, and he's assured me that he's acted with proper motives.
Have you talked to the controller since it was reported that he's being investigated by the U.S. attorney?
Not since that report. Some of the stories came out, and I spoke with him briefly about it.
What kind of an exchange did you have, and do you have full confidence in him?
I have confidence in the people that are in Sacramento, the constitutional officers. I don't have access to all this information, and I look at what's going on, and I'm waiting to see what the results are.
Did you seek reassurances?
I don't think it'll be. No, I have a great confidence in Ken and the others, but I think that it's really not my role to sit in judgment before the facts are set forth. And those proper agencies are now looking into it. In the one case, the federal people, and in the other, the attorney general. And we'll just have to see what happens. It's a difficult thing in politics when facts and charges are brought out before an official determination is made. And I think every man is entitled to the presumption that we accord everyone who's accused of something.
Governor, let me ask you a couple of questions about energy. The figures vary, but some prophets say that we're going to run out of oil and gas in another 25 years or 30 years or something like that.
We are going to run out of oil and gas in some fixed period, whether it's 20 or 50, we don't know.
One idea that has been proposed is a state energy corporation or a combined state and private corporation to get into the marketplace, produce energy. What do you think of that idea?
I think it bears some analysis. I'm not prepared to endorse it at this point, but I would like to see a greater role by the state in the problems of energy development, geothermal, the question of offshore drilling. I think we've got to take a look at it and make sure the state interests are protected. And right now, my office and the person of my legal affairs secretary is investigating the whole problem of offshore drilling. There's now a bill by Charlie Warren to set up an energy corporation, and I expect to get some recommendations very soon on what kind of support I ought to give it.
If the federal government sells drilling leases on the Outer Continental Shelf, isn't there a danger that the wells there will drain oil from under state lands closer to shore? And if so, does that mean that if there's drilling in the federal lands, there then has to be more drilling in the state lands?
Well, what I'd like to see is, first of all, the exploration separated from any drilling. First, we don't know what's out there. And there are tracks of oil under that ocean that are further away from the shore. That's certainly where it ought to start. And before we do anything, before we give away that very vital right that is really the right of all the people to enjoy that wealth, we first of all ought to find out what's there. We ought to make sure the government gets a fair return, and we ought to assure ourselves that there's no environmental damage that we can prevent by scientific technology. And I don't think we're at that point yet. And that's the reason my administration is attempting to postpone the proposed drilling out in the Santa Monica Bay.
Steve?
Governor, you keep referring to the changing character of the American society, that people are going to have to lower their expectations, almost as though you're some sort of a prophet of doom. Are things going to get worse as far as you see
it? Well, it's all what you assume. I think America has a role to play. I think we are leading. We're at the cutting edge of history. But the love affair with the automobile, the unlimited cheap land, the clean air, the unlimited clean water, that is closing down. We don't have as much as we did before. And it takes tremendous leadership and the confidence of people to make these adjustments that are imposed by the environment, by the depletion of our resources, and by the competition of other countries. We don't have the same domination that we had 10 years ago. And it's having an impact. Just look at your utility bills. Look at the cost of things. Look at unemployment. That is a structural change caused by the international changes that are going on. And that is going to affect the lives of people in California. And I feel it's my responsibility to try to chart the future and the reality as I see it, not to try to kid people, build them up for a letdown. I don't think that unlimited consumption is necessarily a good thing in the first place. So I don't say it is a prophecy of doom. I think it's a great opportunity to improve the quality of life and to really measure up to the, you know, the American spirit.
What kind of role is the state going to play in this?
Well, the state plays a role through our educational system, through our environmental protection, through the use of our water and our land, what we do to our agriculture, do we protect the land so that we can grow enough food? Those are all things that I'm concerned about and actively working on.
But you're talking about a lowering of the standards for the middle class. People are going to have to tighten their belts.
Well, it's all what I'd say clean air, safe streets, adequate food, decent schools. I'd say that's a high quality of life. Now, that may not mean that you have, you know, rising incomes at the same rate we've had before. It's just not true. It's not going to happen. But we can try in the public sector to do the best job we can to give equal opportunity in an environment that, you know, brings out the best in people.
Do you think this is healthy?
I think it's healthy. I think it's real. And I think the American people have come through a lot of crises and will come through the change in the economy and technology that we're facing. I have great confidence in the pioneering spirit of people in this state and this country to meet any challenge. But we can't meet it by ignoring it. We ignored Vietnam. We ignored it for 10 years. We were told it's the light at the end of the tunnel, just a little more money, a little more resources, a few more bombs. It just wasn't true. And I'm not going to tell people that environmental purity is around the corner with no money. It's going to cost money. Good schools cost money. And that means that we're all going to have to pay for it.
Governor, you referred earlier in this program to the traditional liberal position of solving these problems by continuing to expand, by continuing to grow, and now you're talking about us having a limited resource, about having to rob Peter to pay Paul. Are we committed to a no-growth policy in California?
No, we're committed to reasonable growth. And when I say that the economy is slowing down, it's not the conscious decision of anyone. It's just a fact of life that the land, the resources, and the position of this country with respect to the rest of the world is changing. We've lost some of the dominance. We've lost some of our open space in our resources and our minerals. And because of that, it's very tough to make the economy go like it used to.
Well, then wouldn't a no-growth policy be acceptable?
No, I think we have to make as much reasonable growth as possible because we still have a tremendous amount of unmet needs. And we have to expand in energy, in geothermal and solar. All these are areas where we have to expand, and that means growth.
Governor,
we have to control it so the growth is tailored to human needs rather than reverse.
If the pie, the total economic pie, is no longer expanding as much as it used to.
Well, it's not an if. The pie went down 4% in 1974-75. So let's not talk about as though this is something that may happen. It is happening.
And yeah, but it might go back up again.
Every economist in this country is saying it's going to grow very slowly this year.
Okay.
And maybe it'll slip next year.
All right. Then, in order to meet the social needs, the education and other needs that we've been talking about in this program that you've talked about so much, does that mean then that somehow there has to be a transfer of wealth, that the rich have to have less and the poor in order for the poor to have more?
Well, I see a changing of priorities within the public sector itself. For example, if it's in education, I would put the first priority in the early ages, because I think that when kids need it the most, it's when they're younger. And then a second priority as they get older and into adult education. But as far as a redistribution, I don't think that's going to occur except through the normal course of the progressive income tax, through stimulated economic opportunity. And as a matter of fact, we're doing that already. We're doing that through transfer payments, through the unemployment insurance, through the Social Security programs. We're engaged in that now. It's not whether, but it's how much and at what rate.
Do you want more transfer of wealth from the rich to the poor?
I think that ought to occur principally in the private sector through the stimulation of jobs. I think everyone ought to be guaranteed an opportunity to work. And I think the lower form of jobs ought to be paid better. The reason I supported the farm labor laws, I think the farm workers ought to be able to organize. They ought to be able to get more money. The reason I support the tip bill to give the dishwashers and waitresses more money is that I think the work has got to be made more attractive. And that means you've got to pay higher wages. That's why I supported more money for the clerical workers in state government. I want to dignify and make more profitable people actually working than the reverse, where you just give people money for doing nothing. I think that's a formula for disaster.
How about state economic planning?
I think we ought to do some of that. I think we ought to do regional planning, national planning. But that's not a panacea. You know, we've spent $50 million on our highway plan, and it's basically just a bunch of paper that gives us very little direction. Put a lot of planners to work. It put a lot of Xerox copies on a lot of people's desks. But does that tell us where to go? Very, very little. Unfortunate thing, that you have a problem, but planning or a little bit of bureaucracy doesn't necessarily make the problem go away. And what I'm trying to do is to bring the best people I can to Sacramento to ask some questions, to open up government, and to do the best we can, and to let people in on what's happening. I don't think people ought to be kidded. I think people ought to know that times are tough, the utility rates are going up, there's a natural gas shortage coming up in the next year or two, and we've got to do everything we can to do the best for our people, and it's not easy.
Warren. My understanding is that one of the trends in the economy is that there is greater wealth concentrated in the hands of fewer people than there used to be. Now, every time you talk about solving economic problems and you resort to the private sector, you make it sound as if companies are going to give up profits voluntarily and people are going to give up personal wealth voluntarily in order to solve social problems. You really think that's going to happen? Doesn't the government
I think there's a structure, compulsory regulation? A lot of these regulations make it more difficult for smaller business to get started. There's a lot of subsidies.
What about the tax structure?
Tax structure, I think that business ought to pay its fair share, and that's the reason I support the lowering of the business tax from 2/3 to a majority. I think that's a good idea. That's why I support the abolition of the oil depletion allowance. I support the preferential tax on sheltered income. That's a bill that'll come up in September in the legislature. People who have sheltered income, capital gains, these oil leases, they're going to have to pay more under a bill that I'm very much behind. We have to make people pay their fair share. But to think that there's a golden goose out there laying a lot of eggs, I don't see it. If somebody can show it to me, I'll be glad to pick them up and hand them out.
But with respect to the private sector, do you think that people are going to voluntarily give up money in order to improve the lot of other people?
No. I don't think so, but I think business...
You keep calling for that to happen.
No, what I call for a recognition of what we face, I think we ought to re-examine the subsidies in water, in land, in taxation, in forestry, where the government is actually helping business beyond maybe what it should. And if we redistribute those so that we give every business, small, big, or middle, an opportunity to grow and to prosper, I think that's a better way to do it.
Governor, can we move from governing to politics for a moment? Been some concern that
politics
you have not...
Politics is a little easier than governing.
Well, we'll find out. There's been some concern that you have not shown great enthusiasm and have not lent sufficient support to the effort by Los Angeles to attract the Democratic National Convention here. Robert Strauss was a guest on this program a week ago. He said he thought you were speaking tongue-in-cheek when you talked about the delegates sleeping in church basements and that sort of thing. Were you?
Well, I'm moderately serious about that. I think that my point was this. I think it's a little bit inappropriate for the Democratic Party, which is the party of the people, to be begging a convention to come out here based on whether or not we have enough luxury hotel rooms and can wine and dine the Democratic committee. We have a great city. We've got a lot of room. And if there's a shortage of space, I'm sure that other Democrats will be glad to welcome those from other states into their homes.
Do you expect
we need
to see
a little bit of revitalization of that party.
Do you expect to see them in Los Angeles?
I wouldn't be a bit surprised when people compare New York to California. I think they might be very well advised to come out here.
Governor, the FBI crime figures came out recently showing an 18% increase in the most serious crime across the country. The first quarter of this year compared to the first quarter of last year. One of the big increases was in murder, armed robbery, that kind of thing. Are you ready to support some tough gun control legislation to try to reduce the number of killings?
I think the Saturday night specials ought to be... curbed. I think there ought to be adequate registration. I think those are all good. I think there ought to be stiff sentencing for anybody who uses a gun in the commission of a crime. I think those are all elements of it.
Senator,
I think we
Bielans.
Need speedier trials. I think we need fixed sentences so people know what the penalty for committing these crimes are.
In Massachusetts, there's a new law on the books requiring a mandatory 1 to 5 years in jail for anyone found carrying a gun without a license to do so. No questions asked, just 1 to 5. You favor that for California?
I wouldn't want to commit myself to that particular type of thing, but clear, certain sentences for packing a gun in the commission of a crime is an idea that I think merits a lot of consideration.
Senator Bielanson and others want to ban handguns altogether. Would you go that far?
No.
Why? When you consider...
Why? Because I think that you ought to try things gradually. I think we ought to ban the cheap handguns. We ought to try to use registration, and we got to try to use tough sentencing and see how that works.
What's the purpose of a handgun other than to kill somebody? This is the argument used by the handgun control people.
A lot of people want them for self-defense.
You think they should have them?
It's always been a tradition in this country. I'm a little reluctant to see that eliminated.
Chief Davis says that every homeowner ought to have a gun because the police aren't really capable of protecting them. Do you agree with that?
No, I wouldn't go that far.
You talked about penalties, tough penalties, in making the judicial appointments, a few of which you have made. Have you insisted in interviewing those candidates that they hand out tough penalties? Is that what
I've discussed it with them, but I've tried to assure myself that they're intelligent, thoughtful people that are aware of the criminal problem in California, but I don't think it's proper for me to try to extract from any judicial appointee some particular approach. It's not possible. First of all, after you appoint them, they don't owe you anything, and they're there to do what they believe is right.
Governor, the Secretary of Health and Welfare, Mario Blato, has said that originally the state of California didn't want to welcome the Vietnamese refugees, but now that's being reconsidered, that he's going to go to Camp Pendleton and see what the problems are, and maybe the state will take a more active role in trying to take care of the Vietnamese. Has a plan come up yet?
No, we were originally concerned about what would happen to these refugees. Everybody said, you know, just bring them in, we'll all have jobs, and everybody will take care of them. I didn't think that was going to happen, and that's what's turned out. But now the people are here, and we have an obligation. We have to be hospitable. We have to find a life for them, and I'll do everything I can to provide that opportunity. But it's difficult. We have a lot of people out of work, and they'll just have to compete with everyone else.
Can the state afford it?
Well, sure, we can afford a lot of these things, but it'll increase the welfare payments. It'll increase the demand on the scarce jobs. But, you know, this is America. We're hospitable, and we'll do everything we can. That's now our responsibility.
Governor, some of your supporters think you should not only concentrate on state matters, but also speak out nationally on the needs as you see them. Some of the things you've been talking about here, belt tightening and scarcity. Do you intend to do that?
Yes. I'm trying to do that right now. I think that it's important to chart the direction where we possibly can go. And, you know, everywhere I go, I try to tell people what I see is possible, what I see the priorities are.
And what are the implications of that? Does speaking out nationally and programs of this kind and other kinds...
I haven't
kinds,
done too many of these.
Does that
so
suggest
I don't know what the implications
are. Does that suggest the need for some kind of national role?
Well, the governor of California has a role, whether he likes it or
beyond
not, in
that.
The party and
beyond
in
that.
The country.
Some kind of political campaign?
I'm going to try to do the best I can and... a short time that I've been given to put this state on the map, and that's exactly what I'm going to do.
And talking about your programs, you said it will take, it's at least a four-year proposition. Do you expect that Jerry Brown might be a two-term governor?
I wouldn't anticipate. I'll do the best I can, put in all the energy that I have. You know, it's a job that it takes a lot of commitment, and I'll do the best I can for the term that I have. Beyond that, I'll just see what happens.
Governor, there's been a rumor kicking around for months. I've never, and I should indicate this to you, never seen any substantial evidence for it whatsoever, but since we have an hour, I want to ask you. When you were traveling in South America, did you ever have any contact at all with the CIA?
Not that I'm aware of. I've met a lot of people in state embassies, and some of them may have been in the CIA, but they had no badges on, and they didn't so identify themselves.
You were never
contacted?
I went
to almost every country, and I went into a lot of embassies when I was there. So I'm sure some of the people might have been involved, but I didn't know that for a fact.
You were never contacted? Nobody ever asked you to do work for the government or anything of that sort?
No.
Governor, you have supported collective bargaining.
I haven't heard that rumor. I've heard a lot of them, but where...
That's been kicking around. As I say, I've never seen substantial evidence for it.
Jeff?
Governor, you supported collective bargaining for state employees, an effort that has not yet succeeded. Did the California Highway Patrol slow down, hamper... your effort to achieve collective bargaining rights for state employees?
No, I don't think so.
How did the public respond to that in your judgment?
Well, I don't think they cared for it, and I don't think the highway patrolmen cared for it.
Didn't damage their case then?
Well, I don't think it helped it. But they were expecting that, and the law recommended they get 17%, and I cut it to 10%. So that's not very pleasant, and I sympathize with them. But I'm trying to put the lid on things, and that's just one of the areas I thought ought to be cut
back. What would you have done if they had continued their slowdown?
I would have spoken with the director to tell him to take whatever action was required to make sure the duties were carried out for anybody on the payroll. I don't think you can fool around with that. I think collective bargaining makes sense. I think it only makes sense if management is tough and fair. If it doesn't, you give away the store. But I think workers have a right to organize, and I'll be glad to meet them at the bargaining table, and I think I'll do a very credible job for the taxpayers of California.
You told a group of us last fall that you'd go up to Sacramento, see if California were governable, and if it was, fine. If it wasn't, after 4 years, you'd announce it and do something else. Have you found it governable?
You know, I can't tell. I think it's governable. But it's governable by all of us working together. And governable only over time, and not in days and hours, but really in months and years.
I'm sorry, our time is up. Our thanks to Governor Edmund G. Brown, Jr. for being with us tonight. News conference will return next week at its usual time, 6:30, when our guest will be State Air Resources Board Chairman Tom Quinn. I'm Bob Abernethy, KNBC News. For myself, Jess Marlowe, Warren Olney, and Steve Mallory, good evening.